on air, online, on digital, and the ABC Listen app. The Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
And coming up today, it's been more than a half century since we've seen these sort of beef prices.
Going back to the 1960s, and so you know, making the prices into current day dollar values effectively. And if you look back then, there were a few occasions where we did get above 900 cents in inflation adjusted terms. And indeed, the peak was back in 1965.
And freight issues still disrupting the export of Australian wool.
It looks to be improving a little bit, particularly domestically, just between broker stores and packers. There seems to be wool coming out, being ordered out of broker stores a little bit quicker now, which is good. But there's absolutely no doubt that exporters are still facing issues with shipments and getting containers and that kind of thing.
Wool and beef, two of our biggest industries, especially with a record Eastern Young Cattle Indicator passing the 900 cent mark for the first time. But as we just heard, in inflation adjustment terms, we've been there before. We'll talk beef prices later in the program and what it all may mean for processors, and take you to the winner sale yesterday at Powerana for a look, as well as talk to Richard Bailey. And you might have some thoughts on what's going on. Have you cut back on meat purchases or changed the diet? 0438 922 936, that text line number, 0438 922 936. Well, yesterday we heard about Sun Farmers' plans to make big cuts in its growing areas this season in poppies, but its competitor, Extractas Bioscience, says despite the decline in sales, it's looking to increase its area this year. Lachlan Bennett spoke to field operations manager Noel Bevan.
As you know, the poppy gene is quite often a volatile area, if you like. In terms of the amount of hectares to be grown, we've experienced significant decreases in area ourselves in recent past years. Happy to say this year that at this point in time we'll be growing more than we grew last year. Although that figure's not totally determined right at this point in time, that is getting closer by the day, and we expect to be growing a significant area increase on our last year's area.
And in terms of those declines you had a few years back, are you kind of starting to recover a bit more in terms of the volumes?
Yes, look, that's correct, Lachlan. There's been some stock moved in that period of time. It's a very competitive market. Things change very quickly. I'd have to say COVID is not helping. You know, the elective surgeries that have been cancelled or delayed signify that the product we produce is not being used in that manner, so that, you know, it all has an effect. I guess, you know, we're no different to any other business. If we're producing milk, we're relying on the users of milk to buy the product. In this case, poppy products, the end user, their demand has changed dramatically as well. So, you know, it is a changing landscape. And you have to react to those market forces at the time.
And in terms of that drop in elective surgery, are you not as impacted by that trend this year because you've sort of already scaled back a little bit in the past and now you're sort of in a more manageable volume to deal with that drop in demand?
I think that's a very fair comment, Lachlan. We went through a very difficult phase last year as a company. We shed significant staff numbers. We reduced costs in just about every operating area we have. We're a much leaner, meaner machine at this point in time than we were, you know, 12 and 18 months ago. So as I said, you do have to react to the market forces. You know, we are quite happy with the position we're in at the moment. We believe we've made some good decisions and, you know, it's probably highlighted by the fact that we'll be growing some more area this year.
Do you know at this stage how much more you're going to be growing this year, or at least how much you're hoping to?
Look, I'm not prepared to put my hand on a number as of today. That can change overnight at the moment before orders are nailed down. But it will be, at this stage, we appear to be in a position of growing a significantly larger area than we were last year, bearing in mind that last year, you know, we grew 3,000 hectares. That's a relatively small area compared to what we have grown in some years in past times. We believe the industry is stabilising to some extent from our perspective. We'll be making an announcement in the coming days or weeks, certainly not too many weeks, I'm hoping, but we'll be making an announcement at the appropriate time as to what level of crop we'll be looking for.
Given the cuts with Sun Pharma, are you thinking you might be able to pick up a few of their growers or contract a bit of their former land?
Going on the number of phone calls I've had in the last 24 hours, there'll be a lot of Sun growers hoping that we can accommodate them. And I dare say we will be able to accommodate some. But of course, our loyal growers will be given first preference. We're very much about long-term relationships, but I'm sure we'll be happy to welcome some Sun growers onto our growing list. We can only grow what we can sell. It's a very regulated industry, and you know, if you look back to things like the wool stockpile, we're thankful it is very regulated. And yes, there will be some extremes in areas at times, but at least it is very regulated, and usually it's a short-term pothole or glitch.
That's Noel Bevan, the Field Operations Manager with Extract Tas Bioscience, talking there to Lachlan Bennett about their plans to plant more poppy crops this year. Well, he mentioned wool there, and wool auctions in Melbourne resumed this week after the Easter break. Finer wool sold well, while crossbreds continue to lag behind. Larissa Smith spoke to Rob Calvert from Wool Solutions about some of the market dynamics affecting the supply chain.
After the Easter recess, we had a bigger than usual offering of 54,000 bales, which is particularly big for the time of year and also the biggest for the season, which is very unusual. And with that looming, there was a little bit of nervousness from buyers that the quantity may kill the market a bit, but we managed to hold up pretty well, actually. Market was unchanged on day one, eased a little bit day two, but then fine wool certainly picked up quite strongly yesterday, so a good result.
Let's stay in Melbourne for a bit. We've been hearing about shipping congestion for a long time now. Any signs of improvement?
Look, the issues are still there. But it looks to be improving a little bit, particularly domestically, just between broker stores and packers. There seems to be wool coming out, being ordered out of broker stores a little bit quicker now, which is good. But there's absolutely no doubt that exporters are still facing issues with shipments and getting containers and that kind of thing. It's just a grind. It's a lot more difficult than it should be to get wool offshore now.
What about the delays in getting wool out of Tassie to Melbourne? What's changed there?
Well, not so much delays in timing, but certainly, like everywhere, costs are going up. You know, we've noticed over the last couple of years costs rise across Bass Strait, and look, it's looking likely that they'll go up again shortly. And that's a little bit of frustrating, I guess, from a Tasmanian perspective, because it's a cost we can't avoid. And we are supported by the Tasmanian Freight Equalisation Scheme, but as freight rates go up, the equalisation scheme remains the same, so it's essentially coming straight out of growers' pockets.
And do you feel that this shipping congestion, the extra congestion charges that the shipping lines are tacking on to costs, growers will evidently wear at the auction?
Unfortunately, that's the way it works. I mean, particularly from an exporter point of view, I mean, they work out, you know, a barame on what it's going to cost to export a bale of wool, and if those costs go up, they have to factor that in, and the way they pass it on is through greasy price. It's very difficult to say, you know, prices are going to drop by X. It gets lost in the noise of the market, I guess, but, you know, there's absolutely no doubt that the costs will be passed on, and unfortunately it comes back to greasy prices, and, yeah, it's unfortunate.
We're coming to that time of year where new contracts are drawn up between superfine wool growers in Tassie and European buyers. Given the volatility in the market for that sort of high-end suitwear line, is there some reluctance to lock prices in?
Certainly. So it's Italy, which is where most of these contracts come from. They're obviously still reeling from COVID up there. And as you say, that suiting market's probably been the most affected by the change in, you know, in our lives, basically, around the world. We're simply not seeing the formal events. We're not seeing people going into the workplace. So the need for suiting has dropped. So those guys are feeling it. So to answer your question, by now we should have been probably seeing some contracts for the new season. We haven't seen those yet, but that's not to say they're not coming. I was speaking to a couple of the guys involved in Melbourne this week, and they're saying, look, proceed as though they're going to come out. We just need to leave it to the 11th hour before we can make a decision on price and quantity and that kind of thing.
Keep an eye on that space.
Keep an eye on it, I think. I mean, don't write it off just yet. We'll give them every possibility, you know, opportunity to get something out for us, for sure.
Let's change hats. You're the Vice President of the Campbelltown Show.
Yes.
6 weeks away.
That's right. It's come on pretty quick, actually. So not far away at all, yeah.
What's been happening to get this new pavilion up and running?
So it's been very, very busy. That's why it's creeping up on us a little bit. But, yeah, we're fortunate enough to receive some federal funding, Ag Show's funding of $500,000 during the year. And that's been put to developing and reinvigorating, if you like, the LA Burberry Pavilion, which is the northern end of the shed where the wool is displayed. So work's underway there now. Fingers crossed it'll be finished in time. I think it will be. I'm heading down there today to have a look. So, yeah, we'll be unveiling that, which is great. But really, we really want to let everyone know that the show's going ahead. It's a bit uncertain with events around the state at the moment, but the show is going ahead as normal on the 28th and 9th of May, and it will be a great one to see as much support as we can from local community and, you know, urban community as well.
What sort of entries are trickling in at the moment? Are there deadlines for others?
Yeah, so I think the unsuredness around whether the show was going ahead, we're seeing entries come in a bit slower than we would like. So sheep entries closed today. So certainly anybody that's considering displaying or entering sheep, if they could get in contact ASAP. We're also, the wool competitions are going ahead as normal. We have a new steward of the wool competition, Matilda Scott, who's going to be fantastic. But again, if we can be organised and get entries in as soon as possible, make the whole thing flow nice and easy, hopefully.
Hopefully it does, yes. Rob Calvert from Wool Solutions chatting there to Larissa Smith about the Campbelltown show next month and what's happening with wool markets this week. Talking about shows, one of the well-known voices in the Australian ag show circuit is hanging up the microphone. We'll have that story for you very shortly. And also coming up, freeze-dried feta cheese. Don't forget to text on 0438 922 936, 0438 922 936. This is the Tasmanian Country Hour.
This week on Landline, big mining backing green hydrogen, the latest climate change buzzword. Feta, fresh from the cupboard after 18 months, a COVID solution to surplus goat milk.
So I've actually had a lot of cattle stations because they can't get out to buy their fresh dairy.
And here comes the tax man. Sharks taking a bite out of the recreational catch in WA. That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
It's the Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
And later on in the program, we'll talk about the Eastern Young Cattle Indicator surging through the 900 cents mark. But adjusted for time, it's not the first time, actually, that it's been in that area, if you take into account the years. And we go back to 1965 and find out that it was there before. So we'll tell you all about that a little bit later in the program. But talking Landline, imagine a cheese that can sit in a packet in the cupboard for 18 months and be ready to use when it's open. A quick-thinking dairy goat farmer whose restaurant orders dried up overnight during COVID lockdowns came up with a solution, freeze-dried goat's feta. Landline's Jennifer Nichols has the story.
Hello, girls. Hello.
Anyone who claims that goats will eat anything hasn't met Karen Lindsay's pampered herd. High in the hills of Wamuran, just north of Brisbane, these discerning does only accept the very best grain, hay and chaff. Every one of the 45 Saanen, British Alpine and Toggenburg dairy goats is known by name, not number.
Zella, Emmy!
And most of them come running to be milked when they're called.
Come on!
As soon as they're born, they've got a name.
And how emotionally attached do you get to them?
To the stage where if I'm losing one, I know I can't save it. I'll sit there and cry with it in my arms until she goes, and then I'll sob like a child. Yeah, yeah, terrible. I shouldn't be in this game. I shouldn't, but I am. School teacher for about 30 years, on and off. and decided to get two goats. I don't know why, I think we thought it was novel, but let's get a goat. So we knew the health benefits of milk.
That was 16 years ago.
Good girl.
Initially, cheese wasn't the obvious solution to surplus milk.
Because I didn't even like goat cheese. I hated goat cheese. But I thought, we've got milk, what can I do? I've done custard, I've done ice cream, I've done yogurt. That was revolting. So we thought, we'll do cheese. And from the minute we did that, I was hooked. Hooked, gave up teaching, bought a buck, and that's where we are today.
Now every drop is needed to keep up with demand. In a refrigerated room, the process begins to transform it into award-winning feta.
So pasteurise the milk, then you have to wait till it cool it, until it gets to the right temperature, add your culture and rennet, stir it, and I leave my cheese overnight.
The next day, the whey is drained off and kept for a pet food manufacturer. The cheese goes into baskets to drain. It takes 200 litres of milk and several days to make a 120-kilogram batch.
And because this is a really, really soft feta, maybe later tonight, early in the morning, I'll come down and start flipping them over. So I do that for 2 days and then I put them into brine.
Karen adds Australian-grown garlic, olive oil and pepper to make marinated Persian feta. 8 years ago, she plucked up the courage to get accreditation and start selling little white goat cheese.
When I started, I didn't have any belief in myself. But who's going to eat my cheese? And like even last night at Meet the Makers, the number of people who ate it and the response, it makes you feel good.
Meet the Makers was organised by the Food Agribusiness Network, or FAN, a cluster group with 320 members representing the entire food chain, from small producers and value adders to large manufacturers in the Moreton Bay, Sunshine Coast, Noosa and Gympie Council regions. 75 members showcased their products to more than 500 buyers and passionate foodies. The Food Agribusiness Network focuses on strength through collaboration.
We've got 80 of our members here today exhibiting their amazing produce and food.
Emma Greenhatch is FAN's CEO.
Our businesses are in there supporting each other. They're not just competing, they're cooperating, and they're finding a whole heap of different ways to do that, like making new products together, distributing together, finding new market channels together, and that's quite special and unique to this region.
Have you tried? Meet the Maker was where Stuart and Lisa Bell first met Karen Lindsay 2 years ago. The two-hatted chef and his wife run fine dining restaurant Harry's on Budrum. Little white goat cheese always features on their menu.
Salad, please. Enjoy. Thank you.
This entree combines feta with charred peach, green beans, frika, which is green harvested, boiled and toasted durum wheat, and a walnut vinaigrette. Stuart Bell's also experimenting with Karen Lindsay's latest product, what's believed to be the world's first freeze-dried goat's feta.
This is a rhubarb parfait compote.
The award-winning chef layers ribbons of fresh apple on baked apple sorbet and a syrupy fruit sauce, adding caramelised apple, poached rhubarb and a sprinkle of freeze-dried goat's feta. It's a versatile cheese.
So we use it for the entrees, the savoury, and then we also use it as a sweet element as well, especially the little freeze-dried one there works well on the desserts.
I wouldn't have even thought of that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yum.
COVID-19 lockdowns forced Karen Lindsay to think outside the square. Freeze-drying preserved her product.
Every restaurant shut, so my orders went to nothing, absolutely nothing. So the girls don't stop producing milk. I'd heard of a cheddar being freeze-dried in America, and I knew someone who worked in a freeze-dried business, and she said, come bring some up, see what it's like, and we fell in love.
Over 24 hours, 98% of the moisture content is extracted. The crumble's flavour is intense.
And it sits in your pantry for 18 months. No refrigeration, no reconstituting. Take it out of the packet, add it to anything. Pastries, pizzas, pasta, salads. Eat it. Just eat it.
Many of its buyers live in outback Australia.
I've actually had a lot of cattle stations because they can't get out to buy their fresh dairy. So having that in the cupboard is a little bit special, even if they chuck it on a steak sandwich or whatever. Heaven! Come on.
Dairying's demanding work.
Come on. Year before last, it was the first holiday in 15 years. We'd booked for 10 days and I think we came back on day 8 because I missed them.
How much love do you get out of them?
Oh, sometimes more than people give you, I think. You can be cranky, you can be swearing, you can be in a bad mood, you can be miserable, crying, and one or more of the girls will come up and just put their head on your shoulder and just takes it all away. It's worth it. Yeah, it just makes everything worth it.
Yeah, lovely story. Karen Lindsay and one of her goats. And that full story will air on Sunday at 12:30 on Landline. Or you can catch up on ABC iView. Well, becoming the chief announcer at a royal show in Australia was Angus Lane's childhood dream. He's chosen the Toowoomba Royal Show to hang up his microphone. While he's going to be at a few more local shows this year, it will be the final time announcing at this level. Mr. Lane's dulcet tones have wafted over show rings across Australia for more than three decades. And along with wife Vicky, he's seen some of the best of the best. He's told Arnie Felton Taylor, the time is right.
So this is where I started. I started in a miniature arena, would you believe, back in 89 or 90. It's been wonderful. And it's just been a joy to be part of the Royal Agricultural Society of Queensland for all those years and celebrating 30 years, or 31 years this year. So I feel very blessed. And I pay tribute to my lovely wife, Vicky, who unfortunately not with me this year, but we've just worked as a team and we've just loved every moment of what we do, and particularly everything to do with the cattle, the dairy cattle. I mean, the shows are all about agriculture to me, and it's all about the best of the best. So what better way to spend your life?
And not just the Royal here in Queensland, other shows around the country have experienced the best of the best in Angus Lane. You've been the voice of shows for so long.
Mm-hmm.
What made you love it for that long? What made it your passion?
I was just a little boy growing up in Brisbane, and I sat on Machinery Hill when my mum said to me when I was 9 years of age, if you could do anything at the Royal Show in Brisbane, what would it be? I said, I'd like to take that microphone and be the Royal Show ring announcer. And that was always a dream. I had 30 years in the land, which was a great education for me. I learned about the needs and the requirements of drought and floods and hard times. And I saw the needs of people particularly, and that's so much part of what we're doing now. So I think that just enthused me. Look, it's just that passion that I have for agriculture. I just love primary producers. I love what they represent. I just love what the shows represent. You know, to me, shows are the greatest things on earth.
What are your highlights? I mean, the show reel is long, I imagine.
Yeah, it is, and without a doubt. I mean, being appointed chief announcer of the Echo in 92, that was my dream, to be at the Echo, because I grew up in Brisbane, to be here at the Toowoomba Royal Show Society, and then I was on the long list for the Olympic Games for the show dumping in 2000, and I chose to go to the Perth Royal Show for my very first time. I've had 20 years at Perth, and we've just enjoyed travelling Australia. But look, there's been so many highlights, and I dare say just seeing the success of this next generation has been just one of the greatest highlights for me, seeing the success of the next generation coming through, following their fathers and their grandfathers' footsteps and continuing the passion. There's nothing like it, and I just wish them all well, and particularly coming up to the Beef Expo in Rockhampton, where I've had the pleasure of being up there since 91 too.
What do you see as the future of shows in Australia?
I see them as being great. I think it's just a matter of people making sure they support their shows and become a volunteer. There's nothing nicer than volunteering your services to be involved in shows. But I think we've got some great leaders and we have some great examples for people to follow on. There's an exciting time ahead, and that's why I believe it's time for me. We've had COVID. I didn't do an event for 12 months. My last event last year was Oakey, and I started Oakey again this year. There's so many challenges ahead for people, and in getting back into the swing of it as well. Also, for personal reasons, with my wife Vicky, who's been suffering, cancer's a terrible thing. And just God bless her, because without her, I'd never have had the success in my life. Whoever follows us, I wish them well, and all I can do is just hope and pray that they've had and have a great journey just like we've had.
You're an absolutely wonderful team, and our best thoughts with you and with Vicky into the future. Your succession plan, do you have someone working with you at the moment, looking to I mean, they're huge boots to fill, I dare say.
I do, and again, thanks to Vicky. Vicky's done a lot of hard work behind the scenes in putting together some books, information for young Jake Smith, who's up with me this year at Toowoomba Royal Show. And we believe in that so much. And there's also Lindsay Douglas that has just been superb. And also Tim Dreverman, another young gentleman that's at the Sydney Royal Show. And also there's another young fellow up in the Darling Downs, Justin Matthews. But I just say to all those that would like to be an announcer, become a storyteller. anyone can do announcing, anyone can do results, anyone can just say, well, ladies and gentlemen, we have the Australian Stock Horse Gelding class or whatever, but learn to become a storyteller. It's so important because there's generations of people that have given their blood and their sweat and their tears to make a successful business on as primary producers and also exhibitors at shows. So to all those young people, my advice is simply become a storyteller, and I just wish them all the very best for the future. And I know Jake, he's excited to be up at the Beef Expo. He's excited to be going right through to Cairns and Darwin. And I'm so pleased that those show societies actually allowed me to nominate someone, as they did in Central Queensland with Lindsay Douglas. So I wish them all well.
Yes, well done. Over 30 years of service, the voice of the Ag Shows, Angus Lane, speaking there with Ali Felton-Taylor. And if you're in the Hobart area today, head down to Parliament House Lawns right now. There is a mini show on there to celebrate 200 years of the Royal Hobart Show. So if you're looking for something to do with the kids on the school holidays, there's a suggestion for you down in Parliament House Lawns. And time now to check the latest on the weather. Brooke Oakley joins us from the Bureau. G'day, Brooke.
Good afternoon, Tony.
Rainfall, what have we got in the gauge?
The rainfall in the 24 hours to 9 a.m. this morning, we had fair amounts of rain into the west of the state, sort of 10 to 25 millimetres, with the highest totals being 23 millimetres at Cradle Valley, followed by 20 millimetres at Narcissus River. The rest of the state generally received 1 to 5 millimetres of rain. Since 9 a.m, there hasn't been a whole lot around. There has been 13.3 millimetres at Mount Reid, but that's probably more likely snow melt. Behind that, 3 millimetres at Cradle Valley. And for the rest of today, we're expecting it to be fine apart from some light showers about the west. And really, for the next few days, we're stuck in a westerly stream with cold fronts expected on Tuesday and on Thursday. So if we look at the weather for tomorrow, there'll be showers about the west, far south and Bass Strait Islands, and mainly fine elsewhere. There might be a little bit of patchy morning frost inland. It won't be as extensive as this morning because it's not going to be quite as cold, and we'll see westerly winds. On Sunday, again, showers about the west, far south and Bass Strait Islands, but fine elsewhere with westerly winds. And on Monday, light showers about the west and north, increasing during the afternoon and evening and fine elsewhere. The northwesterly winds will start to strengthen late in the day as the cold front approaches. And on Tuesday, we'll have showers extending statewide early as the cold front crosses, then contracting to the west, far south and northeast in the evening, with fresh northwesterly winds shifting southwesterly during the morning. And so the next cold morning is probably next Wednesday behind that cold front, where we've got a bit more cold air. In terms of snow with the cold front, we're looking at the snow lowering to around 900 metres. So some snow flurries about the higher peaks, but not a huge amount of snow.
Okay, warnings.
The warnings are the same for today and tomorrow. We have a gale warning for southern coastal waters from Tasman Island to Low Rocky Point for westerly winds, and a strong wind warning for western coastal waters from Low Rocky Point to Sandy Cape. So for people who are interested in the coastal waters, for today we've got westerly winds of 15 to 25 knots, reaching 25 to 35 knots about the south. The swells in the west and south are southwesterly around 5 metres, decreasing to 4 to 4.5 metres in the evening. And the wave rider buoy at Cape Sorrel is actually a little bit higher at the moment, is 6.4 metres. In the north, a westerly around 1 metre. And in the east, a south to southwesterly of 1 to 3 metres, reaching 3 to 5 metres in the south. And the wave rider buoy at Maria Island is currently reading 2 metres. Heading into tomorrow, we're looking at westerly winds of 15 to 25 knots, reaching 20 to 30 knots about the south, and up to 35 knots in the early morning. The swells in the west and south are west to southwesterly of 3 to 4 metres, reaching 4 to 5 metres in the south. In the north, are westerly below 1 metre, and in the east, are south to southwesterly of 1 to 3 metres, reaching 3 to 4 metres offshore in the south.
Terrific, Brooke. And are you singing that song? Before I was talking to you off air, we were talking about that famous disco song, Go West.
I definitely am not, but I did pass it on to my colleagues and now they're kind of grimacing and going, Go West.
Which version are you singing, the Pet Shop Boys or the Village People?
You know what? I'm not that familiar with old songs, so I only know the one version, and I'm guessing it's the Village People one.
Fair enough. All right, go west, young woman, and we'll talk again.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, Brooke Oakley from the Bureau there with all the information that westerly weather is going to affect us right throughout into next week, as Brooke was saying. Enjoy it anyway. It's not too bad out there. Hope it's okay where you are. 0438 922 936 is our text line number. 0438 922 936. We'll talk a lot about beef and cattle very shortly, and in just a moment we shall talk about some announcements for agriculture in Tasmania that were made this morning. This is the Tasmanian Country Hour.
I'm Emma from the Wiggles. We're celebrating 30 years with our friends at the ABC. Join us for We're All Fruit Salad, a collection of our favourite wiggly tunes from the last three decades, featuring original classics like Hot Potato and Rockabye Bear, plus new favourites from Anthony, Simon, Lockie and me, Emma. We're All Fruit Salad, the Wiggles' greatest hits. Watch the collection on digital or DVD and listen to the album wherever you get your music.
On air, online, on digital, and the ABC Listen app. This is the Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Yes, we'll have Richard Bailey along very shortly with the latest on the livestock markets, and we'll also visit the wiener sale yesterday at Powrenna. And today, a berry farm hosted politicians and stakeholders in Tasmanian agriculture for a series of announcements. Our reporter, our new reporter, Luke Radford, was also there and joins the Country Hour. G'day, Luke.
Good afternoon, Tony.
Mate, first of all, welcome to the Tasmanian Country Hour. And you'll be filling some big shoes with Larissa taking maternity leave from today.
Indeed, it is a large pair of shoes to fill, Tony. I'm a little bit nervous, to say the least, but nonetheless, we must push ahead.
Yeah, look, I'm sure you'll be fine, and I just want to say a big thank you to Larissa for all her work over the past few years, and before that, of course, on the mainland with Country Hours. She's fantastic as a rural reporter, always friendly, very knowledgeable, and I'm sure she'll make a great mum to the new bub, which I believe is a boy, going to be a boy. So I did suggest the name Anthony, but I don't think it got very far with her, Luke.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so... down to business. What did the Liberals announce today?
Yeah, so we were obviously out at Buried in Tas, which is out at Carrick, about 20 minutes out of Launceston. Guy Barnett was there, the Primary Industries Minister, talking probably a big game going into the next election about the Liberal Party's investment into agriculture, or should we say their plan to invest in agriculture, because of course this is all an election promise, an election pledge. So we'll have to wait and see whether or not they get over the line first. But here's a little bit of what he had to say. Oh, we don't seem to have that
so,
all.
So today this is all about accelerating agriculture. It's all about taking agriculture to the next level. This is about both future-proofing agriculture and future-facing, making the opportunity to grow to farm gate value of $10 billion by 2050. We're on track, but there's a lot more to do. We are laying the foundations today to accelerate agriculture. The announcements that I'm rolling out today on behalf of the Gutwin Majority Liberal Government are the most comprehensive and visionary agricultural policies in history.
So there we have it.
And that's the Prime Minister Guy Barnett at the announcement today. So what's the centrepiece of the policy that was talked about, Luke?
So, of course, they announced $50 million worth of agricultural policies. Probably not quite a centrepiece, although we will say that it's definitely the irrigation, $23.7 million to supersize five proposed irrigation schemes across Tasmania. That's the Don, the Tamar, the Sassafras, the Northern Midlands and the Fingal schemes, part of a third tranche of the Pipeline to Prosperity project. So the Hodgman government in 2019 previously committed $70 million to this, but additional funding designed to respond to increased demand, obviously announced today. The state also said they needed to seek an additional $100 million from the federal government about it, but they have said that they've had some ongoing and worthwhile talks. So that is, well, it's essentially going through.
Okay, now these projects have all been on the cards for a fair while. What about some of the other proposed irrigation projects in the state?
Well, there's $5 million to develop a business case for the long-awaited Southeast Extension Scheme. That was proposed first back in 2016, and an expression of interest process to find additional irrigation demand for the Southeast, which concluded in March 2020. Now, they've also pledged $1.5 million for the Rural Water Use Strategy to pursue projects including the River Health Advisory Project, industry communications, the Streamline Dam Management, and safety improvements, and also license and permit monitoring and, of course, metering.
And, Luke, one of the important things in Tasmania, because we're an island state, obviously, is biosecurity. Was that mentioned today?
It was mentioned. This has obviously been a bit of a point of sort of contention between the two parties. Labor's had a lot to say about this as well. But for his part this morning, Guy Barnett announced $2.3 million to strengthen resources and expertise in supporting Tasmania's disease-free claims. Also $4.2 million to the Natural Resource Management Boards in the North, South and the Northwest. $750,000 for three additional biosecurity offices dedicated to Tasmania's livestock sector, and $350,000 to make King Island's biosecurity offices full-time and permanent. And also there was a $360,000 thrown in there over 4 years to support industry, improve livestock traceability and enhance systems for tracing primary produce as well.
And we're creating a bit of a precedent here with our new reporters sending them out to political announcements. I can remember when Hugh Hogan started in the Northwest, the federal election was underway. And I think the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, was talking to Hugh in a patch of carrots. So you weren't quite in a patch of carrots, but you're in amongst the political campaign. Well done.
Indeed, indeed.
Okay, thanks for that, Luke Redford, our new reporter, who, as I mentioned, will replace our very lovely Larissa Smith, who is going on maternity leave from today. Coming up very shortly, we'll look at the Eastern Young Cattle Indicator, which has bounced through the 900 cents mark. Luke will be back to take us to the weaner sale at Parana, and then Richard Bailey will have all the information for you on the prices on the cattle, the lamb and the sheep. This is the Tasmanian Country Hour.
This week on Landline, big mining backing green hydrogen, the latest climate change buzzword. Feta, fresh from the cupboard after 18 months, a COVID solution to surplus goat milk.
So I've actually had a lot of cattle stations because they can't get out to buy their fresh dairy.
And here comes the tax man. Sharks taking a bite out of the recreational catch in WA. That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
Coast to coast, this is the Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
To the cattle industry now, and the Eastern Young Cattle Indicator has passed the 900 cents a kilogram mark for the first time in history. The EYCI closed yesterday at 901.75 cents, almost 200 cents up on the same time last year. Rural reporter Angus Verley spoke with Matt Dalgleish from Thomas Elder Markets about the historic occasion.
Oh, look, Angus, it was something that we'd been looking at for a while. We'd kind of expected at some stage, given the northern rains we'd seen, that we could see this move above 900 cents. We briefly nearly got there a week or so ago. We got to 896 and then it backed away a little bit. But I just think that intent to restock is just too strong, particularly in those parts of the north now, and they're, you know, kind of getting some rain too, and they've taken off a bit, so it's kind of pushed along.
So for you, is it just a natural consequence of excellent seasonal conditions, restocker demand, and feedlot of demand, all of those things coming together?
That's right, and obviously the very tight supply we've had for the last few years, you know, lowest herd in nearly 30 years, I think it is, Angus, so yeah, that's a combination of all those factors that you've just outlined that have really got the rocket under in particular young cattle prices.
What does it mean for the different players in the supply chain when we have got cattle prices so high? Because we have heard a lot from processors in recent times saying that these prices aren't sustainable. So what does it mean for the whole supply chain?
Oh, a great question, actually, and it's very timely because on Thomas Elder Markets we just put up our beef processor margin model for March, and that's shown exactly what the processors have been saying, that it's a very tough environment. It's obviously not just young cattle prices that at record highs. We're also seeing pretty high prices all across the, you know, the cattle types, and indeed right the way through to finished steers. So that's meant that, you know, along the supply chain, particularly for processors, it's a very difficult time, and the margin showing for the last 3 months, they've been losing in excess of $300 per head of animal slaughtered, according to that model. So the kind of, I guess, the worst margins we've seen on a monthly basis for as long as that particular model goes back to, which is the 2000s.
And now we hear processors say that they can't sustain these prices. So will we see processors drop out?
Look, if you look back historically, and AMPC did a really good work on a similar type model to the one Thomas Elder Market used in terms of theoretical beef processor, and they compared times when we had negative margin and what happened to processors when they were extended periods of negative margin, and it definitely lines up with that analysis that shows processors did actually close down. And, you know, some for a temporary, you know, kind of situation, but obviously some closed down permanently. I think as this extends, we're certainly going to see some of the temporary windbacks and reducement of shifts and stuff, which we're already seeing. Indeed, some lines in Victoria for some abattoirs have shifted down from three lines to one. I'd expect for some of the maybe smaller, less efficient processes, it's going to be a really tough decision that they're facing in the next few months.
You touched on it there, Matt, but where do you expect prices to trend as we go through the winter months?
In May, actually, is the time when prices kind of tend to ease a little bit seasonally, and then we start to pick up again as we go through into kind of the depth of winter. But I suspect with this rain we're seeing, just how tight the supply is, we may not see that easing in May. I think we might just go straight into a bit of a winter creep. They're very high prices, though, Angus. I think if you look back, and we did some work a few weeks back on Thomas Elder Market to inflation adjust the young cattle price going back to the 1960s. And so, you know, making the prices into current day dollar values effectively. And if you look back then, there were a few occasions where we did get above 900 cents in inflation adjusted terms. And indeed the peak was back in 1965 when we reached 936 cents in current dollar value. So I guess that's the next real benchmark is do we see this year that we test to those inflation adjusted all time highs?
Yeah, that was Matt Dalgleish, at least manager of Commodity Markets Insights at Thomas Elder Market, speaking there with Angus Verley about the Eastern Young Cattle Indicator going above 900 cents a kilo. But as he said, for inflation adjusted, it had already been there back in 1965. So. Interesting to see where that price will go. Richard Bailey has his thoughts. We'll hear from Richard very shortly. But if you've been following the markets, as we've just heard, it's getting pretty pricey. Luke Redford, our reporter, dropped into the weaner sales at Parana yesterday and caught up with Nutrien auctioneer Warren Johnston.
Look, it's been a good day. We've had a really good lineup of cattle, particularly we've probably had a biggest yarding of white-faced and red cattle for the season, but in saying that, a very good yarding of black cattle too.
Yeah.
But look, it's been a busy 24 hours, but a good result again. Cattle market's still very, very good. Although we've seen it come back in little increments throughout the selling season, it's still a phenomenal result from what we saw 12 months and 2 years ago. And we're seeing the averages of our calves potentially $400 to $500 up on 12 months ago.
And how many head today?
We've yarded about 2,630 odd cattle.
And how's that compared to the sales across the year?
Look, all our sales this year, we've had more cattle than every sale, and I think it's a combination of people taking advantage of the price that's been available for their weaner cattle rather than carrying them through the winter. And, you know, there's a few more people with a few more breeders out there which are breeding more numbers of calves which are coming forward.
Yeah. So you've been up auctioning all morning. What have the buyers been like?
Oh, they've been good. Look, we know all these people. They know us, and they're a pretty good crowd. We all tend to get along fairly well, and Tassie is a small state, and everyone knows everyone.
Has there been some good enthusiasm this morning?
Oh, there has been. I mean, the whole cattle market it has got enthusiasm in it at the moment, and it doesn't look like that's going to disappear in any short term. So, yes, I guess from a vendor's point of view or a breeder's point of view, there's certainly enthusiasm with receiving the results they're receiving at this point. But, you know, the grass market's been good and people are wanting to put cattle away for the winter and into the spring.
You had a few buyers on Auction Plus that were tagging in over the internet. How's that stacked up against the local buyers here today?
Oh, look, we did have interest on Auction Plus today and we did sell a few cattle on Auction Plus. I haven't seen the results on how many people have logged in today yet, but we're generally seeing anywhere from 50 to, well, I think last sale we had something like 137 people logged in watching the sale on the day, so maybe people from right across the country.
And is there anything today that's really stood out to you?
Oh, look, I think the quality of the cattle is a standout, and that's been an ongoing thing all season. The quality of the calves this year has been phenomenal, as it should be. I mean, you know, the season's been good, and it's been good for cattle, and they're presenting very well.
And then just finally today, we've got one more sale coming up next month. What are you expecting?
Look, that'll be probably a smaller sale of the season. I would envisage we'll come up with 1,200 to 1,500 cattle, so it'll be 1,000 cattle less than today. But again, it'll be the last major sale of the season, so there'll be people there still wanting to buy cattle for that later market.
It's Nutrien livestock agent Warren Johnston speaking there with Luke Radford at the Powrenna Weaner Sale yesterday. Sounds like it was a great day out at the Weaner Sale. And to tell us more about the prices, let's say g'day to Richard Bailey. How are you going, Richard?
G'day, Tony. Yeah, good day out there. As Warren said, 2,636 mainly weaners. Once again, like it's been right through the whole autumn season, very good lineup of calves. A few more coloured calves than we've been used to. A few more Shorthorns, Eurocrosses, Herefords, and also a lot of Angus cattle. Yeah, very good sale. It was a little bit cheaper than 3 weeks ago, probably $70 to $100 cheaper than 3 weeks ago. But as Warren just mentioned a minute ago, way up on last year and, of course, miles up on the year before. But we're about 300 headed to Victoria. The rest stayed here, which has been very good from a processing point of view down the track. There haven't been a lot of cattle go out of any of the store, so, the store weaner sales, so that's been a bonus. Just a few quotes. Heavy steer weaners, $1,590 to $1,880, averaging 470 cents a kilo. Medium weights, 1,440 to 1,650 to average 510. Light, 1,200 to 1,540 to average 565. And the very small calves, 920 to 1,040. The best of the heifers we saw, a couple of people needing or wanting heifers to breed from, and they clashed on two or three lines, and we saw a top of $2,240 and a couple of other $1,900s and that sort of thing, but they are definitely going back as breeders. Now, some of the others will too, but they'll probably have to wait a season. So the heaviest heifers made $1,460 to a top of $2,240. Medium weights, $1,200 to $1,980 to average 460 cents a kilo, and light, 810 to 1,500 to average 490. Some very small calves made $740 to $960 a head. So a very good day all round. And a typical autumn or spring day, we were going along pretty well in the shed. We came out of the shed and blow me down if we didn't get a shower of rain. But then, within 5 minutes, it was a beautiful sunny day. So.
Yes.
And I think from what I'm told, we didn't get one, but I'm told overnight there was a frost in quite a few parts of the north.
Okay. Well, for people visiting from the mainland, they would have felt the four seasons in one day, I reckon. Richard, they're talking about the Eastern Young Cattle Indicator reaching 900 cents for the first time. So what's happening on the mainland?
Yeah, that got over 900 cents, I think, last night or the night before. I'm not sure when. That's totally driven by restockers and feeders. Although, you know, looking at prime markets with cattle going to kill, there's a huge number of yearlings making between 400 and 500 cents a kilo. Now, I know that's a big range, but you know, there in the interstate markets, there's very few yearlings making under 400 cents a kilo, and a lot up in that sort of 450 to 500 cents. So, and they're having to pay that because they're competing with particularly the feedlots are very, very strong. And the store cattle markets, and still a few weaner sales in Victoria, a lot of those cattle are heading into New South Wales and even further up, but particularly up into the middle and north of New South Wales, which I suppose surprised me a little bit yesterday that our market did come back a fraction. You know, I thought knowing what what was happening interstate. I thought we probably they would be punching. That I think there's a feeling around talking to a few agents and producers that the whole state needs a bit of a drink at the moment. And I think people are just, you know, probably just hanging just to wait to see whether we can get a follow-up to the autumn rains we've already had. The other one that was interesting, I heard from two or three people yesterday, you know, that liquidity is not quite as good as it used to be. You know, if you want to buy 50 cards and you're having to pay $1,500 a head, you know, that's a fair little check you've got to come up with.
Isn't it? Yeah. I reckon.
Just while we're still on calf sales, next week, Elders, which is the final of the major wiener sales, on Thursday, they look like they'll line up between 1,500 and 1,800 cattle. Then in May, we go back to the shared sale, combined sales. And there'll be some wieners in that sale, but this is going to be the end of the sales. And it's been a very, very good season of selling,
I reckon. What about the lamb and sheep?
Lamb market's a bit interesting at the moment. Big numbers of lambs coming into the market. We had close to 40,000 lambs at Ballarat on Tuesday, and the same at Wagga yesterday of 38,000 or something. Big numbers, particularly out of the cropping areas, because they're getting ready. They want out of their lambs and ready to sow. And so there's a heap of lambs coming into the market. It has put a bit of pressure on prices. Not drastic, but it certainly, you know, it dropped them sort of $5 to $10 a head in most places. It means that your extra heavy lambs are sort of anywhere from sort of 730 to 770 cents a kilo. Then you got up into your sort of heavy trade lambs, 780 to 820, and your lighter lambs, you know, over $8 a head, over $8 a kilo, which is, you know, pretty good money, I think, at this time of the year. And as I said last week or the week before, the people that would probably like it a fair bit higher are the people that have bought lambs for $160 or $70 over the last few months. But once this bit of a flurry of lambs, you know, of supply of lambs finishes, I think my gut feeling is that we'll probably see a little bit more competition floating around. Mutton job last week and early this week was off the planet again. Sort of a lot of sheep, 650 to 700 cents a kilo. By the time we got to Ballarat on Tuesday and Hamilton on Thursday and Wagga yesterday, we were back sort of more like 630 to 680 cents a kilo. Terrific money, though. You know, that's a huge number of sheep making over $150 and a fair swag making over $200 a head. So, you know, pretty exciting. I can't see that changing much mutton-wise because I don't think the supply will change much.
All right, Richard, well, you have a great weekend and we'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Good on you, Tony.
Yeah, Richard Bailey, our livestock reporter, will be back with us next Wednesday on the Country Hour for more info. 40,000 lambs, that's a lot, isn't it, Ballarat? Boy. If you go to our ABC Rural online page, you'll see a story about the poppy cutbacks and also on our ABC Rural Facebook page. Whatever you're doing this weekend, make sure you enjoy what you're doing. Do it safely and we'll catch you after midday Monday.